I listen to me. Lecture 14. Lecture 14. I listen to me. Sometimes voices ring out about me, an illusion. I've trained myself to tune into my inner realm alone. I listen to my heart, my soul, my spirit, myself. Everything reminds me to listen to me. Think about this very seriously. Sometimes voices ring out about me, and they're but an illusion. Have you ever studied how sound works? Sound is a very unique thing. And animals hear sound, birds hear sound, plants hear sound, people hear sound, dogs hear sound. And all make interpretations of what these sounds mean to them, the vibrations mean to them. The vibrations come upon the ear, or the essence of all things. And as they come upon this essence of all things, the essence interprets what the vibrations mean. Now, do the vibrations always mean the same thing to everything that hears it? And the answer is no. Why is it the vibrations don't always mean the same thing to everyone who hears it, or everything that hears it? And the reason for that is that which it gives off the vibrations is not always certain of what it wants to express. In a theater, they act with happiness, Pollyanna, joy, they act with enthusiasm, with peace, they act with tragedy, they act with all these sort of things. Now, some actors are good, and you feel the happiness that they project. You feel the sadness they project. You feel all the emotions that they project. Some actors are false. Now, false to their acting profession. They may be so very happy, they just won the sweepstakes, they just got a couple of $30-40 million to do anything they want to with. And then they have to go on stage and play a little poor person, you know. Now, can they pretend that they have no money when they have so much money? It's not too difficult to pretend you don't have much money when you don't have much money. But to pretend you don't have much money when you have a lot of money is kind of difficult. It's sort of a false attitude, a false impression. And so the actor is on stage who has just won this great amount of money. And everybody in the audience knows that actor won that money. They read the newspapers. They heard it on television that he had just won the sweepstake ticket. He won the lottery. He won the numbers. He had everything. And then he comes on the stage acting like some pauper, some very poor person. And as he's walking on the stage, he says, "Can you help a guy out? I don't have any money at all." And the audience is laughing up their sleeve. $30 million, you don't have any money, what are you talking about? And they're not thinking of the character that he's portraying. They're thinking about the actor, the real person. Not the facetious person, not the fictitious person. Could you project whatever you want to project? Say, for instance, the poverty. Could you project poverty? Could you act it out if you really were very, very wealthy? And I say it's an easy thing to do. You look at some of these movie stars who get $30 million for playing a part, you know, not bad. You take some of these football, baseball, basketball, soccer players who get $30 million, you know, $3 million, $5 million for being on a team. And then they have to get out there and be aggressive. They have to get out there and really make things look terrible. And they get out there and they just race up and down that field. You know, they have incentive to do it. They're paid well. But Can they be mean? If they become mean, and some do, if they become mean, they soon lose their strength. They lose their, they're like Samson who had his hair cut off, and he lost all of his strength. What happened when Samson had his hair cut off? That was his virility. That was his manhood. That was his indication of the greatness that he was. And so he was cowering. Even though he's a big hulk of a man, he could do anything. But inside, he was beaten. It took a while for his hair to grow back, but his courage never came back. He never became the same man he was before his hair was cut. So, we want to be something special. We hear these voices ringing out in us, saying that we're poor, that we haven't got this, just because we don't have some money. We're sick just because we happen to have the symptoms. We are limited just because we don't seem to have what an unlimited person would have. This is where you come to the point of not believing in these illusions. It's difficult. It's difficult not to believe in the illusions because they're very real. You cannot reach in your pocket and pull out a $1,000 bill or two. You cannot go to the bank and draw that money out because you haven't got it in there. You feel, wouldn't it be nice if somebody would give you some money? Well, at this point, it's up to us to give ourselves whatever it is that we would like to have. And money is just one area. Health, right relationships, peace, happiness, harmony. Those are all areas where we can speak our word. Now, the illusion is that we don't have it, okay? The illusion is that we don't have harmonious relationships just because our wife ran away, or our husband ran away, or our children ran away. You might say, thank goodness. Now we don't have to pay for their upkeep anymore. But what are we doing? We are giving away our rulership, our leadership, our control. We're giving away our direction of who we are. Because each of us is the master of our life. Each of us is the master of our thoughts. Now, you hear the vibrations coming to your ears of the sounds of man and music. And as you hear these vibrations coming to you, how do you respond to them? Do you respond to them like Donald Simoda when the skies were singing out heavenly songs? He says, shut up, be quiet. And the skies calmed down, all the way down. I want quiet. Well, is that how you speak? Can you speak to the heavens and say, be silent? Or can you speak to the heavens and say, play, I love it? It's not a matter of whether you love it or don't love it. Can you speak to the heavens and have it reproduce whatever is in your heart and your desire? Can you demonstrate out of the infinite nothingness the allness that you want? The only way you can do that is when you are one-pointed. When you are so one-pointed in what you choose to do that you are not thinking one single thought that it's not there already. Now, we read in that statement this morning that you put a deadline, you put a date on things that you want. We just talked about Amelia Cote the day before and how deadlines were put on things. And if you do that, you may get it. You're going to work for it. You may get it. But if you do it this other way, you'll get it, and you won't be all tired out when you got it. You will say, I now am healthy. I now am happy. I now am rich. I now am joyful about everything I do. You see? Now, is the key word. Right now. Not abundance, not health, not right action, not anything else, but now. Right now, whatever you choose to speak your word about, you are. Now, let's go back to the actor. How sincere is the actor in putting forth his show?
To be or not to be, that is the question. It's nobler for the flesh,
you see, and
do you have the conviction? Do you have the power? Do you have the belief in yourself?
Shakespeare is powerful stuff. And Shakespearean actors are powerful actors. They're not simple little actors who just get up there and act mamby-pamby like everyday stuff. The Shakespearean programs make everyday stuff as though they were tremendous events of all history. Now, this is how we want to be an actor. We want to have anything we do be as a tremendous event in all history. And the only way we can have it be a tremendous event in all history is if we put our entire self into it. We put our entire self to be or not to be. You see, you put your full self in. You're not being angry. You're not being anything. You're just being powerful.
Come.
See, right away, you all looked at me. Come. Come over here now. Come. Come. Come here. Come here. He has no authority.
Come.
See, and you say, well, you don't have to speak so loud and shout. No. I'm not speaking loud and shouting. I am just speaking with authority, speaking with affirmation. Now, little love, if I have food, he comes real close. If I don't have food, he backs away because he wants to have a better view. He doesn't back away because he doesn't want to be petted. He wants to have a better view. He wants to see over here and over here if any food is coming out for him, because food seems to be very important to him. Now, I say to him like this, with my finger, I say, come, come, but come, love, come. And he comes over and lets me pet him. Ears down, head down, very docile. And I say, love, come. He looks up at me and says, you don't order me around. You don't order me around. Speak nice to me and I'll come, but don't order me around. That's true. That's true. Now, how does that speak for our authoritative words and affirmations? How does that speak to our divine inner self when we are affirmative in a very domineering way?
I am God, I am good, I am whole and perfect right now.
How does it speak to our divine self? Does our divine self like that, or does it feel objections to that? You say, well, it's not a matter of liking it or feeling objection to it. Now, when you are affirmative, when you are speaking with authority, do you have to speak with such violent dominance?
I am now.
You know, or can you just say, I am now. And think about this. The president of the company, everybody's talking and arguing. He goes like this to his second in command. And the second in command always has his eye on the first in command. And so he comes over, and the first in command says to the second in command, you may tell them all to be quiet now, and I will give them what I want to tell them. And so the second in command stands up and he says, all right, now we're going to hear from the president what his opinion is.
And now we're going to hear from the president what his opinion is.
You don't hear that. Just, but powerful. Now we're going to hear from the president what the president's opinion is. In the United States, when they announce the President of the United States, they get up to the podium, and he walks in, usually just a little late. And as he comes in, they say, ladies and gentlemen, the President of the United States. And he walks up to the podium, and he speaks. And the people are listening very carefully. He lets them ask questions, but he does not answer their questions the way they want it answered. He answers their questions the way he wants to answer it, to his total satisfaction. He speaks to them from his heart. He will not be flustered. He will not be frustrated by any question. They might ask him some outrageous question like, "I understand you were sleeping with another woman last night. Who was that?" And he answers the question. He said, "I think you all have knowledge that I'm not aware of. Now, what's your next question?" You know, not defending it, not denying it, but just answering it how he wishes to answer it. And they might persist. They say, "Well, Mr. President, I understand that you were with Mrs. So-and-so and da-da-da-da." And the president would say, "That is your knowledge. Did you want to be more specific on what your knowledge is? Because it's more than mine." And then, "Well, you were seen going into here and doing that and doing the other thing." "Yes, that's very true. I went to a special private meeting, not secret, but private meeting with the premier of Israel. And we met at this hotel, and his secretary came down to get me, to bring me up to the meeting," and so on and so forth. Gentlemen, if you would like slander, if you would like things that make for yellow journalism, why don't you go and talk to the movie stars? They'll give you lots of that. But the President of the United States is a man of moral dignity and courage who speaks on behalf of the country, who represents the country, and his integrity should never be impugned. And if you have nothing more to do than to seek to try to impugn the integrity of the president, then you are destroying the fabric of our nation. It's bad enough that some presidents make mistakes, that they do things wrong at times, but for you to go looking for it and promoting it in public is not a very happy thing. I think that I have spoken enough with you today. When you are ready to come here to speak to the President of the United States about policy that's governing our country and not personality, I'm happy to be with you. Good day, gentlemen and ladies. You see, don't deny it. Don't say yes. It was revealed, but not immediately. He did not have to defend himself. He did not have to defend himself at all. Usually the Secret Service are so thoroughly around him that no one would ever notice that he was there. But they were around, but nobody noticed that the Secret Service were there. And he went up to speak to the President of Israel. And he made negotiation plans which restrained the nation of Israel from going into war and whatever. But you see, when we want to look for the worst, we can create it out of nothing. We can create it out of nothing because we have such interesting consciousness. We can create everything. The President of the United States was put to task for this one woman. And what really did happen there? He didn't tell. He said, "I will not deny or I will not say yes or no. That's up to you." You see, he does not have to defend his integrity. The moment you ever try to defend your integrity, then there's doubt as to whether the integrity is there. When you just stand up and believe in who you are and know in who you are, and if you have to take an unwarranted punishment or an unwarranted condition in your life, you do that, but you do that with such dignity, with such an ability to be yourself that you're untouched. And this is what it is. You listen to the divine within yourself. And instead of being thrown into the lion's den, as Daniel was, he went in there and the lions were thrown into him. And he
had them all as tame cats, just like Ross and Joan Goodman's daughter. She is now trained to go into the cage with the big cats. That's quite a bit of training. And just like their son, he's now passed probation so that he can drive transit buses for the city of Seattle, Washington. Now, interesting, isn't it? Terminology is interesting, too. Yes, Christina has been put on probation in her consciousness to see how she can handle being with a man and children and living her own spiritual master life. Irene has the same thing. She's being thrown in among all of these people who have illnesses, who are constantly indicating what their sick program is for themselves. And her privilege in going in there is to see them as the Christ would see them, whole and perfect at all times. Under no circumstance does she ever recognize the symptoms or the indications. She always sees them whole and perfect. Oh, she will mend them. She will heal them. She will bless them. She will help them in any way that her business calls for it. But in her consciousness, she sees them. It's just like a little boy who has got a tantrum. You don't pay attention to the tantrum, but yet you have to acknowledge that the tantrum is there. So you go to the little boy and you say, "You know, I think it's time for me to have an ice cream cone, but I hate to go for an ice cream cone alone. You want to come along?" The little boy says, "Yeah." Second before, he was in a tantrum. Now you say, "Is it all that easy?" When you're sincere. Are you trying to do this to make him stop being in a tantrum? Or are you doing this to get him into a condition of harmony within himself? Stop the tantrum or be in harmony with himself. You see, it's all the difference in the world of what your reason is for doing anything. When your reason for doing anything is to bring peace on earth, at any cost, but blow up the enemy. That's not peace, is it? There is no peace at any cost. There is no condition in the world at any cost. Everything is done with the idea of harmony, love, joy, right action, goodness. I can show you through my own life and through your life things that we have done that we have stood up for what we believed, and we haven't been appreciated for it. We haven't been appreciated for it. People would like to tear us down, but that doesn't bother us. Hey, go ahead, tear me down. If that's where you're at, that's fine. People are going to believe me. That's okay. You're going to be shot. That's okay. I know who I am. Now you tell me, any one of you, and you're all a beautiful group of idiots, tell me, does every young man who goes to war, is he an evil person? Is the one who gets shot down, the one who gets killed, is he an evil person? Are the ones who are left unshot alive, are they the good persons? Are you going to say that anyone who is shot down is an evil person? Are you going to say that? I would think not. But you know, you do have a little feeling about them. You have a feeling that perhaps if they were good people, they wouldn't have got shot. It's the same thing that happened to another guy, you know. Remember him? He was supposed to be the leader of a group. And they slaughtered him. Jesus on the cross. Many another too. You know, you don't know anything about the early Christianity movement in the world. And you don't know anything about how Christians went around slaughtering people because they wouldn't become Christians, or because they didn't even know what they wouldn't become. the Christians went out to islands, island nations, to Africa, to many places. Columbus was a very bad person. He came to the islands off of the West Indies, and when he found the natives there, and the natives wouldn't act fast enough, he'd slaughter them. He chopped them down by the hundreds of thousands. Unbelievable. History reports that it's so. Now, what did those natives do that was bad, that was made them want have to be killed, huh? Tell me. It doesn't matter. You see, we've got to stop thinking that to preserve our life is the most precious thing in the world. The most precious thing in the world is to preserve your personal integrity, who you really are. You are untouched by what goes on. If people come to be mean to you, to hate you, to destroy you, to kill you, you just say, what is that to thee? I will always follow my indwelling light. But you get killed. So what? I'll always follow my indwelling light. Perhaps that's one of the things I came here for, is to follow my indwelling light against unbelievable odds. Are you ready to do such a thing? You say, well, I'm walking the spiritual path, and I believe the spiritual path is the greatest thing in the world, and it's the nicest thing in the world, and I want to really walk it because it's great. Well, good. Go ahead, walk it. Does walking the spiritual path mean that everything is rosy and peaches and cream? It could be, depending upon how pure your consciousness is. Now, all these young men who were killed in the wars, they had a dirty consciousness. Mm-hmm. They believed they should kill the enemy. They believed that there was an enemy to kill. They didn't believe in negotiation, working together in harmony and peace. They were taught by their army commanders, their military commanders, you're to go in and kill. You're to go and kill every single German you can ever find. They're bad. They're evil. They want to control the world. They want to kill every Jap from an American point of view, you know. Now, what were the Japanese taught? Kill every American, kill every allied person that you can get a hold of. Because if you don't, they'll come back and fight you some more. And that's true. But you see, then with a snap of a finger, at noon, at 11 o'clock, the armistice was signed at a specific time. And then you're not supposed to shoot anybody anymore. You're not supposed to hate anybody anymore. You're not supposed to be their governor and their ruler. All of a sudden, now they're your new friends. They're your business partners. You see, why do we have these things? We have these things only because we are not one-pointed, pure in our consciousness about who we are. Would you find it easy to kill your son or your daughter? Quite likely not. Or your mother or father. Some people can do that, but most people can't. Why wouldn't you find it easy? Because you are taught to respect your mother and father. You're taught to respect your family, your world. But yet you are able to be changed in an instant to go after other nations in the world and destroy them. So, when we have this inculcated into our consciousness over the years and years and years and years and years and centuries, and we keep reading history and keep seeing how these things happen, don't we realize that every 20 years it seems like a war comes along of some sort, and we go out and slaughter thousands of men, now it's thousands of men and women too. Don't we realize that it's just a reciprocal, it is continuing, it recycles, recycles, recycles. And don't we learn a lesson by it?
It accomplished nothing. It accomplished nothing. It made for some unhappy feelings. It made for people to feel insecure in their home. But when we can change our attitude, and I don't really mean change our attitude, when we can start to love ourselves, which of course is a change of attitude, but when we can start to love ourselves under all circumstances, when we can start to love our creation under all circumstances, then all of those difficult, terrible, rotten, mean things just go away. They have no power over us. They have no control over us. We're the master. Are you ready for such a thing in your life? You sit here and you ponder over the idea of your spiritual path and you say, why is he talking about all this murder and all this war and all these other things? Because that's who you are. You are that past history. It allows you to have mores, moral feelings and values and so forth. And you think it's okay to kill. If someone came in and were going to destroy your family, could you just let them do it, or would you have to stand up and kill them? Well, I'd protect my family. Really? What are you protecting? Number one, why did you create them coming into your world? Why did you create difficult times being out there? Why did you create people being in your world? I surround this property every day with my pure white light of love. And we have drug runners coming through here. We have international visitors coming through here. We have all sorts of things going on here. And we don't even know it. It's like living on another dimension. They're walking through here on another dimension. They're invisible to us. But to the Border Patrol, they're not invisible. They go and find them. They know when they're coming through. They've got little tickers up that tell them when things are happening. And then they have difficulty catching them. Now, you know, if the Border Patrol were wise, they would set up a checkpoint on the highway, not like they have here, but just a checkpoint on the highway, and then they would sit there and they would meditate, and they would say, all illegal aliens will come to our front door. All illegal aliens will come to our front door and turn themselves in. All drug runners will come to our back door and turn themselves in. And the back door is just for drugs. Really, I'm not kidding. It sounds stupid. It sounds silly. But that's the principle. Why is it that some police officers never have to fire a shot? Some police officers never have to use their handcuffs. Some police officers never have to take anyone into custody. And yet, they are the best police officers on the force. Because they talk to the criminal sometimes before he does a criminal act and straighten him out. They talk to him after he does a criminal act and they say, well, now, did that make you feel good? Was that something satisfying to you? Okay, now you're in my control. Let's go down to the station, sign you in, get you a bunk for tonight, get your meal ticket all signed up for you. You'll be spending a few years with us. What would the guy say? I guess you got me. What is the name of the game? Have you ever played Monopoly? We've used that illustration before. When you play Monopoly and you draw a card and the card says, go directly to jail. Do not pass go. Do not collect $200 or do not do any of those things. What do you do? What do you do? You go to jail, right? And you don't pass, you don't collect $200. You don't do anything. You just go to jail. Now, that's a game. And they're trying to teach people who are dishonest to be honest in games, to go to jail when they do something they shouldn't do. Now, it's real. That's real. That's how it goes. And it's interesting, isn't it? You see, people are so ready to think that the world wants to be evil. Well, it doesn't. The more Monopoly that people would play as youngsters, the more bankers and the more successful businessmen, the more real estate people, the more successful beings on the earth there would be. Because they learn principles in that. When you draw a card that says go to jail, you go. When you draw a card that says take five steps, and the fifth step is going to put you right on top of someone's hotel, and you're going to lose everything, you still got to go there. You can't say, let me shoot again. And you know, when you let the little children shoot again, you know what they get? Same thing. They get, if they got five, they'll get five the next time. Okay, shoot again. Then they get five again. Oh, all right, you got 15. Now go. But you see, this is what we do. We teach them to cheat. We don't teach them to take the roll of the dice as they have it and move harmoniously. And there'll be no wars. You know, we've said this before, but what if everyone had an aversion to war? See, what if everyone had an aversion to war? How could you hold a war? Because nobody would come. Well, they put you in jail. So, at least you're not on the battlefield getting shot. You know, there's always an alternative and a good one. When our carrier got bombed by the kamikazes, the guy said, oh, rah, rah, rah. I said, hey. We're going back to Pearl Harbor now to have a new deck put on. It's going to take 6 weeks. We got 6 weeks of liberty. In the middle of a war, we don't have to fight. We don't have to shoot our guns, and we don't have to be a target. And, oh, Varley, how come you're always coming up with the neat answers? Well, because I like me. I look for happiness. In my war experiences, I never had to shoot a gun against anything. In training, you know, you teach you sharpshooting and things like that, but to shoot at somebody, I never had to do that. And if I had to shoot at somebody, I could have shot at them and hit them, no matter where they were, because I was a sharpshooter. But that's only because I was one-pointed. I did that with my bow and arrows. I did it with everything. And, you know, I didn't have to shoot at things. I just shot at targets. It's much better that way. You always can have a proof of what you did. Just think of William Tell shooting the apple off his son's head. He had to have a steady hand, didn't he? I think it was a fictitious story, but it's a good story. Always do whatever it is. Now, William Tell didn't have to shoot it off his son's head, did he? If he hadn't done it, what would have happened? They'd have put him in jail. Now, would you take a chance on shooting your son or going to jail? I mean, you know you're very good. You're very, very good. You're the best archer in the world. But would you take a chance? And the nervous, that's why doctors don't operate on their own families, because they feel they might be inattentive, worrying about their child or their wife or whatever. You follow me? See, it's not that they would do anything wrong, it's that they were inattentive, they were worrying, and that worry took them away from the normal flow of doing their job in its perfect way. I tell you, I've trained myself to tune into my inner realm alone. How do you do that? How do you train yourself to tune into your inner realm alone? Well, quite easy, really. When I'm walking along, I don't listen to the birds singing. I don't listen to the clouds floating through the sky. I don't listen to other people talking. I hear what I want to hear. I hear my footsteps. I hear the trees creaking, the leaves falling. I hear the feathers as they fly through the sky and fall down here and there. I hear them. Herb, you're not supposed to be able to do that. Well, I hear them. And I hear all of these things, and I'm very happy with them. Now, you only hear them when you're one-pointed. Remember in Kung Fu? The master was the teacher and was blind. And Kung Fu came up and he said, Master, how are you doing? And the master said, be quiet. Now,
there's a grasshopper at your foot. What? And the boy looked down, and sure enough, there was a grasshopper there. He said, oh, man, teacher, how did you know there was a grasshopper there? You can't see him. And the teacher said, I heard him. How did he hear him? How did he hear this grasshopper that virtually made no sound at all? And if any sound, it was a very tiny sound. How did he hear it? Because he was in tune with his world. He was one in and as his world. And being one in and as his world, he was aware of everything. He was one-pointed. Now, you and I, we can be one-pointed too, but to be one-pointed takes a great deal of awareness, not concentration. What do I listen to? Anyone? Yeah. My footsteps. My footsteps. I listen to the feathers falling. I listen to the leaves as they break off of the tree and they float gently to the earth. I listen to these things by my choice. I don't listen to noises around, people shooting their guns off on a Sunday. I don't listen to the activity that goes on in the world about me. I don't listen to bullhorns being shouted into the wind. I don't listen to any of that stuff. I only hear my own inner self. I tune into it. And my own inner self I tune into by listening to my own footsteps. Who lets a feather blow in the breeze and fall? Who does any of these things? We do that for ourselves. So, remember that. Concentration, one-pointedness, comes by what you concentrate on, what you are one-pointedness, one-pointed about. Are you one-pointed about listening to your divine inner self, or are you one-pointed about something else? Whatever it is, it's your choice. Whatever it is, that's your experience. And if you want to be one-pointed and you want to have a great time, then start learning how to be one-pointed. There are a number of books out on meditation and on concentration and being one-pointed, but they're of another era. They're of another time. We taught at one point to look at the head of a pin through a magnifying glass and see how many little pock marks are on the head of that pin. There are many. Hundreds of them, and then to try to count them. Rather difficult task. But we taught that as a way of concentrating, a way of listening within. Now, I say to all of you, pay attention to your own life. Pay attention to your own world. I'm going to do things that are going to distract you. And I know where you are. And I know when you're going to be passing by, and I know when I'm going to distract you. Now, I knew that Ingeborg, Inga, was outside, and she was going to be coming in soon. So I took the water container for the dogs, and I washed it out thoroughly, scrubbed it out, and I put it in the sink, and I put the big bowl there so it could fill, and then I went away when she started coming, and I went to the bathroom. When I came back, she had taken my jug out of the sink, turned off the water, which was none of her business. She turned off the water, she took the bowl and put it in the bowl and put it on the floor. And I said to her, Ingeborg, put that back. But, put that, you see, there should have been no argument. I mean, because I'm the boss. And I said, put that back, and she didn't. She said, oh, but I want to... And I said, put it back. Well, I want to bail out. Put it, I had to say it a number of times. Not because she's a bad lady, but because she just feels that she was doing something nice for me. And she was doing something nice. But I was doing something for her. So, she put it back. And I finished filling it properly and put it out where I wanted it. Wiped up the floor where it spilled a little bit. And it was in perfect order. But you see, if you go through life butting into other people's programs,
you mess up their program and your own. If I tell Gertrude, go out and tell Jerome to get out of the pool, I don't have to say immediately, get out of the pool. So Gertrude goes out there, and she sees Jerome having such a good time. It's so tempting not to tell him to get out. But finally she realizes that I had told her to do it, and I meant now. So she says, Jerome, get out of the pool. So Jerome is a very obedient boy. He instantly gets out of the pool. Instantly he covers the pool. Instantly he takes a shower and gets himself ready. And he says, what do you want, Grossie? Well, I just wanted you to get out of the pool and come with me now. So he did. Now, he followed the rules instantly. She followed the rules instantly. And the lesson they have learned was beautiful. Ingeborg said, well, you didn't tell me to do this or do that. Yes, that's right. Now, if you had come out there and you had seen Jerome playing in the pool, splashing and having such a good time, and then you saw Gertrude say, come on, time to get out of the pool. You'd say, Gertrude, it's 15 minutes yet. He can stay in the pool. Mind your own business. And so then Ingeborg comes in the house here. Then John comes by. And John says, hey, that looks like fun. And he leaps into the pool, making a big splash. And Jerome says, whoopee. And Gertrude says, Jerome, get out of there right now. And Jerome says, why? He never says why. But he says why, because you have now been, you did not enforce it the first time, and perhaps you won't enforce it the second time. And so then John is puddling around and splashing Jerome, and they're having such a good time. Oh, Herb, why did you tell me that I got to get this kid out of the pool? Why did you say that? And then John gets out of the pool and dries, and along comes Irene. She jumps in. She says, hey, this is cool. Hey, Jerome, let me pull you in a circle. Jerome, let me do this. Jerome says, yes, 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 yes. And he still doesn't get out of the pool. So you see, if you had gotten him out of the pool so forth, immediately, when you were told to do so, you would not have had any of those other experiences. John wouldn't have come along. Irene wouldn't have come along. Inga wouldn't have come along. Nobody would have come along and offered you advice. You follow me? But you see, you make the problem worse and worse and worse. Because if you don't do it the first time, it gets worse the second time and the next time. And you think, hey, that's not that bad. That's not that bad. It wasn't so important for him to be out of the pool. No. It was not important for him to be out of the pool. But it was important for you to follow the decision. And that would be my decision. You see, you're all given tests from time to time. I say to you, I think that San Diego is a good 1,000 miles from Campbell. You say, what? San Diego is a good 1,000 miles from Campbell. You say, oh, you must be kidding. Instead, what you should say is, yes, sir. San Diego is 1,000 miles from campus. But it seems like it's only 60 miles, but I guess it's 1,000, you know, because you have said it. But you don't even say it seems like only 60. You say it's 1,000. You say, well, that's stupid. I mean, I know better. That's lying. It's lying if you don't do it, because you are learning to follow directions, to be one-pointed, even if it's wrong, even if in your mind it's wrong. Think about it. Each one of you is a master. Each one of you is fantastic. But each one of you is a rebel sometimes too. And being that rebel is just enough to pull you away from that spiritual goal that you have. So close, so close. When you no longer are a rebel with me, with the games I play with you, and you know they're games, when you no longer are a rebel, if I say something, you do it, then you step into that other dimension of awareness, of being your master self. It's interesting that a lot of our students want to take the Illuminations, you know, Handbook of Ascended Masters, Autobiography of God, all these other books that, you know, and then especially Quiet Healing Zone. They want Quiet Healing Zone, and it's not out yet. But they want these things, and they want them because they don't know what they are. They don't know what they are. If they knew what they were, they would perhaps change their whole life. And not perhaps, they would. Now, where do you stand on this? Where do you stand on following directions, being one-pointed? Are you really one-pointed? I'd like to think that you are. I listen to my heart, my soul, my spirit, myself. And as I listen, miracles happen. I listen to my heart, my soul, myself, my spirit, and wonderful things happen. You see, when you listen to your heart, you have a warmth about you. When you listen to your soul, you have an immortality about you. And when you listen to your spirit, you are one as all. It's a great thing, a really great thing. Everything reminds me to listen to me. Everything reminds me to listen to me. When I hear my footsteps, it reminds me to listen to me. When I hear a bird fluttering in the breeze, I listen to me. When I hear an airplane overhead and I look over here where the sound comes from, and it's over here, I listen to me. You see, I have learned in walking the campus where sound comes from, how it bounces off the mountains, how it does all sorts of things. You have too. But you're listening to yourself because yourself is the sounding block. It is the inner self that knows all things. So, I listen to me. Very wonderful topic. Very wonderful person involved in that. That's you. You are yourself, and you're having fun. So, my beloveds, we will have our lunch, and then we will talk about I hear one voice, and that should be very revealing, as you know I tend to be.